Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
Going to be heading over there
tentatively scheduled in the beginning of September. They've invited me to meet with them. They have a very important message to outlay, as well as some spiritual understandings. And this will also be meeting with many of the spiritual and elders of both the Hopis, Navajo, and Pueblo tribes, which I feel also honored to be meeting with them as well. So it's going to be a fascinating thing. Hopefully we'll be able to do a live show from there. We'll see how that works out. If there's any technical problems in doing so, of course, everything's tentative until you're actually there. That's how I look at it. When you're there, you know you're there, right? I just recently got my book regarding, for my new book from my editor. Been going over through it, and I was like, what book is that? I know I've said it a few times, and I'll be sending it once I go over it back to my publisher, and which it has a early release. We plan to release it by 2010, hopefully January, February latest, and I'm really excited about it. And yes, the book is called Spirit. What else? And it has some very dynamics in it. It specifically gets into going out of body and healing, and that's all I'll say for right now. And by the way, next week I am going to be discussing what else, of course, and what I think is very important at these times, in particular, in a lack of responsibility by our or the United States government officials, particularly Congress, dealing with health care. So I will get into that next week. Now, you heard the song I just played following my intro, and it was a very unique song with its own uniqueness, and incorporates many, I guess, both with an esoteric as well as a modern-day music, if you want to call it that. My special guest, his name is Satjot Singh, and he's been walking the journey toward the understanding of all esoterics. He is a yoga master and a highly spiritual teacher. And, of course, he's a student thirsting for the wisdom and understanding of the shamans of the many esoterics. He's had his Siddhartha-like travels, which have been worldwide, where he has gained much new wisdom and understanding and enlightened experiences, in particular also meeting and experiencing many peoples, many souls around Mother Earth. And from his mantras and yoga and his scenes to the wisdom within the spirituality of the Native Americans, Satjot Singh has created his music with the practices and wisdoms of the many esoterics. And without further ado, Satjot Singh, are you still there?
It's great to be here, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you for coming on my show. I got a really, you know, I met you a while back, and I it's sort of funny because before I get into certain, you know, the lineage of question Q&A here, you remind me, you're sort of like the guy who throws the little, I'm making caricature here, that you throw the little sack over your shoulder, and you just, you know, go from city to city, and you're not like seem bound to any particular home. Your home is basically Earth. You just seem to travel a lot, which I found pretty fascinating. And doing so, meeting and consistently meeting new people from, you know, event to event and experience to experience. Most people out there who are listening, who obviously don't know who you are or what you are, and first thing comes up, everybody goes, well, who the hell are you, you know? So can you, in your own words, tell a little bit about yourself, like where you came from, something about your background, and et cetera?
Sure. Well, you know, I had a pretty average upbringing. You know, I grew up in outside of Boston in basically a small town, East Bridgewater, Massachusetts. And, you know, I went to high school, I went to college for music, and once I got on the road at about 19 years old, the whole spiritual journey kind of began. I had a yearning to discover the secret mysteries of creation, if you will. And one thing led to another, and I just found myself moving around like a wandering sadhu, as they call them in India. And I've been very fortunate to meet wonderful teachers from all different cultures, and I've been able to spend a lot of time with a lot of these people. And this wisdom has helped me to continue on this path of mysticism and magic and an extraordinary awareness from all these different cultures. My bread and butter was always playing music, rock and roll bands and whatnot, until 2006 I started learning more about mantras. Mantra means mind projection and the healing sound current that comes from the power of the spoken word. And when you combine it with music, it becomes very powerful. And as people know, sometimes they'll hear a love song that's very healing for them, or a rock and roll song that gives them all the energy they need to get through the day. So this particular science of mantra with music is thousands of years old, and it has incredible healing qualities. So that's what I'm into now.
Yeah, it's actually, it's funny you say that, because most, in fact, I mean, and from culture to culture, they've incorporated, whether through some variances of either chants or mantras, because sound does carry waves that affect your spiritual wells, physical being, even through the quantum energies of they already know about. And, you know, it's, you know, from like the Tibetans, the bulls, the chants within Kabbalism, to the chants and prayers amongst amongst the Native Americans, the mantras of the Hindus, even as the prayers that people do within there, whether it's a church or mosque or whatever, it carries, if they're the mind behind it, carries a certain frequency and frequent mindset behind it. It does carry, it's a pattern, whether, and hopefully it's positive. And, you know, and as long as there's love and enlightenment behind it, that carries its force. It was interesting you said, because a lot of the stuff you went into, I was going, wow, how did you start your music? How, where you came from? Can I add, what instrument do you, since you said you played in rock and roll originally, what instrument did you play?
Well, I started on classical piano. You know, I had to take lessons when I was about 8 years old, and I didn't like it, of course. You know, all the other kids were all playing, and my mother would stick me in a room and make me play for a half hour or an hour. But, of course, now I'm very grateful. And then when I got into high school, I got into some rock bands and started singing and playing guitar, and then went to Berklee College of Music, where I began bass and drums, and then just kind of, you know, flew from there.
So who would you say then is, if you look back in those times, who would you say you're most influenced by, what kind of, who or what kind of music were you most influenced by then and in your former years?
At that time, I was very influenced by classic rock, you know, the Beatles, of course. I was very influenced by Rush at one point. I get into some of the really heavy alternative for a while in the 90s. You know, I like all forms of music because it all has a certain vibration, like what you were stating. It's really scientific. It was very well said the way you put it. And so there's really not much music I don't like. It depends on my mood.
Right. Is there any particular artist that you would say influenced you the most, or you would just say the Beatles? Because I was listening to some of the riffs that you were playing, and they're definitely old school riffs. It's not even alternative. It's back when they used to play normal guitar. Actually, when they really did play guitar, they just didn't strum the chords like they do most. Even alternative, most of the time they just strum the chords. They don't really play heavy leads like they did way back then. And you seem to play this more of a lead type. A harmonious lead, let me put it that way.
Yeah, that's it. You know, anything that had harmonies and then beautiful melodic leads, and you know, that was really prevalent in the classic rock era of the 70s, and then of course, you know, the big hair era of the 80s. I enjoyed that too with all the lead guitar work. So I've been influenced by quite a bit of music. I'd say the decade of the 70s is when I was really young, so I was probably most influenced by the decade of the 70s.
Now, what's really interesting is are you trying to merge? I remember because the Beatles, tried to merge at one point. There's some of the music, specifically like even George Harrison started getting into a merge with, using the sitars and getting in within the Indian music. I'm not talking Native American, I'm talking Indian, India culture and Hindu, like mantra type of music. And he tried to incorporate that within his own music back in the day. But they also, toward the end of Beatles' saga, they were getting into doing more of merging both East and West type of music. Is that sort of like the symbiotic thing that you're trying to do, because it seems like you're trying to do both.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. I am taking the sacred text and some of these words. What I'm using is called Gurmukhi. And Gurmukhi is a language that was started by one of the first masters of the Sikhs. His name was Guru Nanak in the 1400s. And he took Sanskrit and he actually simplified it. And he started writing these words about the divine, about creation. And he didn't just speak them, he sang them all the time. And then he walked around for about 44 years. And he had a lot of amazing abilities, very similar to Jesus. And so these words that I'm using come from what he started. Like I said, Gurmukhi, which comes from Sanskrit. And the science of it is the way your tongue hits your palate when you say these words, it actually realigns your DNA so that you can receive more of the natural light energy of creation so you can evolve a little quicker. It's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes. It's supposed to be very healing. It's supposed to move the kundalini energy at the base of the spine through the body. That piece that you played at the beginning of your show, that mantra does specifically that, and it creates a feeling of bliss.
So all my listeners who are listening right now are getting all excited.
Yeah, they should get all blissed out.
Well, they say about the kundalini, when it gets all hit into the head, it gets all excited.
Yeah, anything can happen. It'd be very orgasmic.
Yeah. So you basically incorporated your lyrics from this particular shaman's Sanskrit, is that correct? That's what I'm saying.
These are very sacred mantras that are used in the practice of Kundalini Yoga as well. And when I'm in LA, I like to go to Golden Bridge Yoga, and every single class they incorporate these mantras, and you can feel the difference in your vibration when you leave the class. It's definitely changed your magnetic field. It's a science.
Now you do, since. Do you teach your own, do you have your own yoga classes that you teach, or do you?
When I'm traveling, I do teach on an individual basis, and I do incorporate much of this wisdom, along with other cultures. You know, as you know, I study the Native Indians and the ancient Essenes, who had an amazing system of communing with the angels, and I like to incorporate different types of body work in a yoga class as well. Satnam Rasayan, which is also, it's Sanskrit, which actually means abandoning oneself to the essence of our true identity. And I believe that this is the essential way that Jesus was able to heal. And so that's something also that it comes from Kundalini Yoga, Satnam Rasayan.
Yeah, utilizing now you the there's also particular like I don't know if you're aware, like in Kabbalism everything's functional on numbers, but it's also about rhythms, because there are rhythms even in sound, and sound has a what they call a sequence of numbers actually relating to the vibration. And so you had mentioned before, you're talking about scenes, and I know in Jesus, which they actually incorporate utilizing Kabbalism approaches in their, you know, whether it's healing or whatever. I see there's a commonality amongst, and that's why I was curious when you said you go travel around. That's what I'm finding, because it's sort of funny that you're doing a pretty similar, something similar that I've done. Is on my path actually came from dealing directly first with Kabbalism for now over 30 years now, but I've also, through meeting people and certain things and experiences, have found very much similarities and commonalities, of particular, let's say, amongst Taoists and the Buddhists and Hinduism and the agnostic Christianity, not the Orthodox Christianity, which there aren't too many of the agnostics. They're mainly of the Templar faction now, if they call them the Templars, some of them. And then there's, you know, of course, Native Americans, and the Hopi is almost identical to Kabbalism, which is really a whole other thing. But I find such a commonality about, like, that's what I was curious when you said you travel around the world and see all these different cultures in so many aspects. I think people tend to see it's so easy to seek divide in culture, which just keeps our unique individuality, which is important. But I think in humanity and on a whole, they need to look upon the non-division of ourselves and look at ourselves as basically one consciousness. And it's interesting that when you talk of the vibrational thing that you do in your music, because people probably aren't aware that, you know, your chakra systems, we are the only souls that have the exact same rhythm corresponding to the electromagnetic waves of the earth, which is really bizarre. We actually have a mirror of our earth to us. We're the only physical beings that do it, not animals, actually only humans have that. So I find that's pretty unique that when you talk about, when you're incorporating your music and you're going around the world and seeing all these different cultures, what is your reflection on humanity as a whole when you see, you know, because most people tend to live in a little bubble, you know what I'm saying? And I'm sure you see this, and then you're sitting there, oh, what the hell? Don't you realize there's other things around that, you know, people are so caught up. How do you relate to those people who are sitting there? I mean, and we're talking about probably 80-90% with ascension. It's changing that. But how do you relate to when you see people living in their little individual bubbles?
The first thing I do is I look for that divine spark, because we all have it. And I feel like that when we look for that in someone else, that all of a sudden they can feel a connection and a vibration, and that begins to open them up to actually coming out of their bubble a little bit.
Now, what if they don't? What if they don't? Some people just tend to see, you know, because I've seen it. It's amazing. I mean, I live like in Las Vegas, and you can see a lot of people definitely inside their bubbles. And then you go to Los Angeles, and you see a whole difference. Even though they're more sophisticated, I tend to see a lot of people running around, actually doing things that are actually very good and healing and all that. But a lot of people I see still caught up in their own individual me-ism dramas, but in another, maybe not a material sense, almost like a centralist tense, instead of, almost like a snootiness, if you want to call it that, like with their noses up in there, if you want to call it that, which isn't really L.A., by the way, because I was born and raised in L.A., real L.A., people born and raised there know that it's very down to earth, and people usually come there and think you're supposed to act somehow superficial, but that's not real Los Angeles. But
being from the East Coast, I really enjoy being in Los Angeles. It's such a higher consciousness where people are really in their body,
and
more so in their heart. Where on the East Coast, people are really in their minds a lot, and I think that's why they're a little more uptight. But to answer your question, if people still don't come out of their bubble, what I'll try to do is, I guess an analogy would be I try to shine up their bubble a little bit so they can at least see a little more clearly out of it. And then, just share things that are on a more materialistic level that can actually lead them to an awareness that they're trying to open to but maybe not be awakened to yet. For instance, lately I've been playing some of these people that are in their bubble to visit some of my friends' website that they talk about. One of them is loveyourself.net and the dailylove.com. These are wonderful guys. Ophir Moses is a producer and a wonderful songwriter I'm working with, and he puts out this wonderful pop clothing with these wonderful images, and Maston Kipp, his partner, to kind of break them out of their bubble a little bit.
So you basically like to show in a relationship. The reason why I bring this up is because I feel like, I get involved with a lot of political stuff, and I see a lot of people still putting, there's like band-aids on, basically on sore, on, you know, on a system, and I feel like the biggest, you know, to get to the dynamics of humanity as a whole is, one is to develop its own self-worth and self-esteem, which is like what you're talking about, the self-love, the enlightenment part of them. Which is the change, which would ultimately change their vibration, increase their vibration, and that would actually lead. Their increasing their vibration leads to all whole new things and openings and more. And it's not just more knowledge, because the knowledge is there; it's the understanding. But there seems to be also, and that's the problem, is to change people's ears, so to speak. In Kabbalah, literally means, for example, to receive, and in the Hopis, me refer to. They just call it the ear and or hearing of the earth, and it's almost the same thing with their tie. Everybody's tie. And humanity needs to instead of dividing itself from the universe and outside, it needs to reopen up its ear. And the shamans in the past have been wiped out pretty much. They were being dissipated purposely to separate humanity from nature, as you call it, or the universe. And by that division, it's created its own cancer, which then produced the symptoms of fear, hate, division, and et cetera. And
I think that brings us back to the commonality you were talking about. That's
right. That's what I was trying to explain. Now, well, the commonality is like the symptom of would be more positive than negative, is because people don't realize. And if you see a lot of, in particular, organized religions, particularly like, for example, in modern Christianity, the first thing it is, they had created. And I'm talking about Orthodox Christianity. Where they try to, and it's opposite of from what Jesus really was about, or the original, the core of real Judaism, is they separated nature from man, and they separate God. They make it a he or a she, you know, or they masculine, which is a whole other side. They separate the human soul from the universe, from nature.
That's a way for the organization to have power. Over
right, and they purpose to cut that off is so that they can control them. Because if when people have that ear and they start reconnecting, they realize that the control is just an illusion, and the fear and hatred is the manipulation. And that's why I think that when I talked to a lot of people, when people ask me, you know, whether it's Muslims, Islam, Jews, all that. I see a commonality when I live there and I visit there. I see not what a lot of what's portrayed a lot on the news, but it's the opposite actually. There's a lot of hatred purposely set in on both sides, particularly more on one, to portray continue the conflict, and it's also to and they do it by creating division, the hatred, the separation, instead of the unification, instead of saying the commonality, which you had spoken on. That's why, you know, when you go from place to place, for example, in India, people don't realize India and Pakistan were one nation at one time. What separated it, all of a sudden became a religious thing. It became a religious, organized thing, and set forth, which created the division of those people, and then the conflict, and the continuation of the conflict allowed the fear to set in, and all this has to do with the separating the individual from the universe, and then I realize we're all in consciousness. So when you're going around the world, that's what I mean. I've traveled a lot in the world, particularly in Europe, and like I said, I lived in Israel for about 6 years in the 80s. But I've seen the same thing over and over again, you know. So yeah. I was curious if you had seen that within itself as well.
Yeah, what I've seen, and I think it's a beautiful thing, is I've noticed what you mentioned as commonality. The way that these wonderful cultures stay connected and so very powerful, because as you know, for us to truly be powerful, we have to allow something greater than ourselves to work through us. And the Native Indians, who are very similar to the ancient Essenes, how they had a oneness with everything in nature.
Now, people don't know, maybe.
They honored everything.
People may not know. Sorry to interrupt you, but people may not know what the Essenes are. Can you explain to people out there what the Essenes are?
Sure, sure. The Essenes, it's actually a teaching that goes way back. And right now we know of the Essenes mostly from the Dead Sea. And they lived communally, and
they were the communists back then. True.
They lived on shores, lakes, and rivers away from cities and towns, and they practiced the communal way of life, and they shared equally in everything. They were agriculturalists. And
like I said, they were the communists back then. Go ahead.
they had a vast knowledge of crops, soil, climatic conditions. And what they did is they grew food, so much food, because gardening was their main thing. They brought down mountain spring water and these intricate aqueducts to desert lands.
The Essenes were actually a sect of very religious Jews, and they're
these are the Jews I'm talking about. They also existed in Egypt. They were called the Therapeutai, where we get the word therapeutic.
Right.
So the teaching was actually all over the world, but this is where we found
about.
Most of the writings from, and the ones that are in the Vatican in ancient Aramaic that no one's seen.
Right.
Most of, if not all of, what's true in the Bible comes directly from these Essene writings. And I know that's a statement that's pretty strong, but if people research that, they'll find that is true. But they immersed themselves in the terrestrial forces during the day, really honoring the land, the earth, the trees. Like I said, they worked in the garden. They get up very, very early. They would always pick their food. They would wash it immediately, and then they would eat it to get all the life force energy from it, and they would eat in silence because it was a very sacred, powerful act. They were the heirs of Chaldean and Persian astronomy and the Egyptian arts of healing. They were adept in prophecy, which they prepared for by prolonged fasting. They understood the use of plants and herbs for healing themselves as well as their animals. I mean, they had an unalterable holiness, and because they lived at such a high vibration, they were able to commune with these angelic forces, not only of the earth, but of the cosmos.
But do you know another aspect of the Essenes? I don't know if you're aware, but they were like, they used to call, there was a Hebrew, they were Nazarene, which meant they were highly, highly, highly religious. If you were supposed to do it, they believe what they call, and today they call the Hasid. If you're supposed to do it one time, they did it 10 times. Mm-hmm. If you're supposed to do it 4 times, they did it 8 times.
Ferris Bueller did it 9 times.
Yeah, they would consistently do things to know. And if you want to relate to who those the type, so people have a reference to and know the times who they can compare to, it would be. And I'm not. This is no exaggeration. They are. There's like a, they follow like the Baal Shem Tov. Basically of the movement of the Hasidim, they are almost the way they, you can particularly the Hasidim, people see them with the long beards and the little curly things coming down, they wear the black clothes, and they would be very much the same, in fact they were the same, in essence, extremely devout, in fact they were so devout even in cleanliness, and
mm-hmm.
their separations when their time of the month thing, they're very, very devout in following the commandments and I'm not talking about just the Ten Commandments, but all the commandments. And but they lived in it. What that was unique, they lived like you were talking about. They were one of the, I don't want to say the only one, but they were the first communes. And by the way, when you were talking about the scene, see, when you're talking about the philosophy of found in Egypt, if people forget that, and this goes back into Kabbalism, people don't realize that Joseph himself, who went to Egypt, by the way, who had, who was part of the Merkava, that's why he had the dreams, who was brought in, which are a lot of the seen theology is bound in with what they call of Joseph, which is why the Hopis have the same thing, because they're from the house of Joseph, which people will find one day soon enough, that information correspondent got to Egypt because Joseph was the foreseer, as you read in the Bible, and the prophet next and second-hand man to the Pharaoh at that time. And that's where there's a mixture. And, of course, the Hebrews, people of Israel, then there was a merger, like in cultures. They mixed both back and forth. In fact, Hebrew, people don't realize where that came from. It actually literally came from the hieroglyphics. The olive is from the bull, and there's every symbol from Hebrew actually came from, and a lot of the mixtures that went back and forth. So the mixtures between Egypt and today we'd say Judaism, or the religion of Israel, was a corresponding mixture. That's why you'll hear people say, actually Israel literally means to struggle with the angel, to struggle with God, because it's questioning of God. But it's real interesting if you break down the words. I had a guest on, and he brought this in, and it's sort of true. Is if you break up the words Israel, you have Isis on one, Isis, Ra, and El.
Yes.
Meaning the God of Israel, the unification of Isis, the feminine and the masculine sides. And that's where the triangle is and all that stuff. But anyway, not to divert you, but that was just, it was interesting you brought that up. So I had that's where a lot of the essences of the Essenes came about. And I know the knowledge that you're talking about, which is unique, which goes into a whole other thing, which I believe is corresponding to, extraterrestrials' involvement with the Essene, that knowledge that you're talking about, why it's sprouted the same ideologies and systems all around the world, because there's an encompassing factor to that. But
yeah, I'd like to touch upon what you just said. You're talking about a remarkable teaching that has existed from the remote ages of antiquity. And those symbols you were talking about, the sun, the moon, and the air, they were found as far back on Sumerian hieroglyphs, even preceding the Pleistocene period. And the fundamental principles of this, like the Kabbalah, and the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life, there's the Essene Tree of Life, there's the Tibetan Wheel of Life, and then the Bodhi Tree, they all correlate.
Yep. That's why that's what I was saying. I think they're all similar, and I personally, this gives everybody's going, what the hell? But I feel there's more of a connection, which I don't want to get into now, of a connection of a more celestial connection. And
you used the term extraterrestrial.
Yeah, and I do believe, and you can see it within the hieroglyphics within Egyptian. There's Ezekiel, Elijah. You can see it within Tibetans, you'll see it within the Mayans, the Hopis. They all have these similar little touches and glimpses. And, it's not by chance that they have the same thing. You'll find what's in Sumerian amongst, you know, the Egyptians to, you know, it's like I Ching, for example. I Ching uses a numerical system approach. Identical, by the way, identical to in Kabbalism. The same counting, by the way, is utilized with Hopis, which has a whole other thing because there's a whole thing where they're originally from. But I just find that you can go circle around the globe and you'll find these commonalities. And like what we were talking about earlier, I think that's what's really important, to find these commonalities to bridge humanity, yet respect the individuality. And it seems to me, I look at the Tree of Life, and this is sort of like what you were talking about, the Bodhi tree of the East, because they sort of say it's pretty much the same thing, is that, you know, the whole people have the misunderstanding, I think, purposely or misled of what the Tree of Life is, and they keep on making it like it's, you know, they start putting little names on it and separations, and, you know, that's actually straight up pure bullshit, because that's not what it is. The tree of life.
You want to do a comparison with the Essene tree of life and the Kabbalah?
Well, the tree of life really, this isn't within Kabbalism, the tree of life literally is essence is the whole universe, okay? Then the whole universe of the tree of life and all the leaves on the tree are all the souls within the whole universe.
And all those ancient Hebrew god names.
No. All you, me, every soul is the leaf on the tree.
Oh, every soul, okay.
Every soul is literally, and that's why it's pointing in a different direction, because we all have our unique perspectives of things. But yet we're all connected to the tree. And the root of the tree, because this is on the spiritual side, the root of the tree, and this is why when within even Native Americans and in Judaism and others, they'll talk the root of pulls us, the connection between the tree to with the earth is the physical side on this realm, see, that like of two realms, the spiritual realm and the physical realm that we perceive as physical. That is the connection. That's what the whole tree of life is. And when people look on us and realize we're all connected and we're all part of the same tree, then they have it. Now, people delegate, like you're saying, the little names and things, but that's actually misinformation. That's not, it's trying to peg things into a finite aspect, and that's the problem. And I don't want to.
When you say misinformation,
because it's not
the
what I mean is, I'll give you an example. In reality, our universe is infinite. If you try to place things in a finite thing by nomenclature or names, it is impossible. It is impossible to say something that is finite when in reality is infinite. Therefore, you never say,
you can't truly understand something unless you experience it.
You hit on a nose, okay? You can't, like, you bite on an apple. You taste the apple. You can, when you describe that you've experienced the taste of the apple, which is the experience, you cannot exactly, you will relate your perspective of that experience in words by with metaphors of description. But you can never really distinctly tell what that taste is. And that's hence the universe. You get the understanding when you bite the apple and I come, that tastes really sweet. And then you taste, I understand. We consciously relate because we've experienced it, but yet we have a unique way of experiencing it, but there's only an understanding. It's not a knowledge. It is an understanding, and out of the understanding we gain wisdom. So that's the whole point. We never really know. We know we have the understanding, and that's because you can't put within. You see, our oversouls, our spiritual souls have the knowledge. When we speak in the finite on this plane, we cannot express what is infinite into finite, and that's our problem. That's where people try to classify and put peg and board things, or put names and sequences on certain things. And they do have certain fundamental reasons. There's another issue of why. It's dealing with, like you had said, when you do Sanskrit, it creates a vibration, which is a movement. It's a functional movement of things. You're playing music. It's a functional movement, expansion of a vibrational force that's carrying a element of something happening.
It allows us to match our vibration to the earth, which is vibrating quicker because we are evolving. You know, the energy, if we're not at the energy level of the earth, we will not be able to comprehend the changes and activities that are happening.
Exactly.
Kundalini yoga teachers, he says, during the Aquarian Age, there'll be three types of people left on the earth, conscious people, dead people, and crazy people. Because if we don't start to vibrate at the level we're supposed to, and I'd love to segue into, you're probably into the Pleiadians and this whole photon that our galaxy is moving into, and that's what the Mayans were talking about. It's not the end of the world. It's going to be the end of life as we know it, because as we enter this photon belt, our DNA is going to evolve so quickly, we're going to start to change. And those people that don't have a strong sense of really what's happening and connectedness to this oneness of creation, there's going to be a lot of dis-ease For other people, they're going to be evolving very, very quickly.
You know what? Who was the teacher who said that? He'll hit it right on the nose. There's going
to
be...
He's at Golden Bridge in L.A., Golden Bridge Yoga. You can go to goldenbridgeyoga.com. His name is Huddy Jeewin.
Huddy Jeewin. But anyway, what he said was so on the nose. People are either going to be dead, crazy, or conscious.
Conscious, dead, or crazy, yeah.
And you know, it's funny, because I see it, because I talk to certain people, they go, oh my God, this is too much for me to handle. That's the crazy one.
Yeah.
The dead ones, I don't believe it. They're all full of shit. I'm just going out for me. I don't really give a goddamn thing there, you know. And then there's people, wow, that's real fascinating. And they're actually being more exposed. By the way, all this stuff happens to be by choice. Everybody has free choice. So they can,
hey,
you know, there's a drawing, by the way. I don't know if you ever saw the Topies drew of the 2012 thing. There's a famous drawing they've drew. This is ancient. It shows them. There's two groups. One group is going up, which is the ascension, and another group actually falling down below and going nowhere. And they said that's that's the fifth world.
And that's the paradox. That's, you know, it's gonna people have a choice. I can give a solution, and this is one of many, but I just want to say that Kundalini yoga, it works your physical body as well as your mental and your soul body, and through the use of these mantras, these mudras, which is how you hold your fingers to connect the different meridians in your body, the asanas, which is the positions that you hold, the pranayama, which is working with the breath, and then through the meditation, finding the power of stillness, this type of Kundalini yoga purifies your blood, it balances your glandular system, balances your chakras, opens up the heart, and it helps the crazy, noisy mind to become still so you can actually make a good decision for your life.
Wow.
That's what Kundalini yoga does.
Yeah. And what it ultimately does is, and it's one of the paths, it's not the only one, but there's one of the a very important paths. That's why I brought you on, because I like what you're trying to do. It's one great healing way of increasing your vibrational area and actually opening up your DNA, both on physicality and as well as spirituality, because they're both in common. And, you know.
And the music really helps very, very much, because it's a universal language containing no boundaries, and we can naturally take in that vibration of the music and the sacred mantras. That can instantly change our vibration, and it can awaken us. And I'm just going to give myself a quick plug. SatJotSingh.com. The minute you start listening to the music I'm doing, it just by trying to say these words, just repeating them just a few times, you'll feel your magnetic field start to change and strengthen, so that all the negativity and these crazy thoughts and people bothering, it's not able to get in anymore. That's what the power of, and you know, any music can actually do this, but not quite like the sacred ancient science.
So can you repeat again? I guess it's just your name, but spell out so everybody knows how to check out your music and
access the website. Oh, it's SatJotSingh.com. Such.com. And I'll be putting more and more music, as well as some of these wonderful teachings that you and I have been talking about. I'll be posting them up on my website throughout the year. And quickly, I just want to segue to Tibet. Tibet is a place where there's so much sacredness happening. And obviously, just like Israel, it seems that wherever there's something great happening in the world, a great teaching, the universe puts the opposite in front of it, a challenge. And there's all kinds of control and war and death and dying, so that the true knowledge can't really get out, the true teaching can't get out. And this has been something that we've been challenged by our whole lives. But this is all supposed to change as we enter the Aquarian Age.
Well, that's funny. Interesting you said that. That's what I feel like. I think there's like three areas, like you said. I think Israel is one, which if you read in within Ezekiel, which I had on a past show, it's that people refer to Son of Man, but it's really in Hebrew it's Ben Adam, which means humanity. Israel is referred to literally, the reflection of humanity. So it's like a litmus, you know, whatever you do to it, it will do to you. That's why when you say, people say you curse Israel, you're really cursing yourself, hence the Pharaoh of the words or whatever. But So like what you're saying, it's a reaction. I think in the same token, Tibet is like also like you can call Israel whatever a reflection. How they pushed out the Dalai Lama from where he's at. It's almost a parallel. You'll see three groups. I hate to tell you, three parallel groups that are very, very much similar. Same things have happened to them. Is you'll look at the people of Israel, the Tibetans, and the Native Americans. Three different continents.
Three of the most important teachings that the world has ever seen.
And have been subjugated to misled information, lies, deceit, consistent attempts to either control them, liquidate them in one way, form or another, or even subdue them, remove their leaders, you know, or whatever.
And these are people that haven't awakened on any level. They're still at a very primal animal level of existing.
Right, and when they move back into where they are from, people, it's like, you know, I'm not going to get into too much politics of it. It's like funny, I know people, because in liberal stuff, and
that's a whole other show.
Destroys another show, and they talk about Israelis, all their occupiers, and yet these same people live on Native American land. And I go, what the hell are you then? I'm not going to get into Israel's being occupiers or whatever, because personally, there was a Hopi elder who once said, called them, you know, you can see who the people really, the earth that really belongs by how Mother Earth has smiled upon them, because they had brought flower, allowed the desert to bloom with a smile. Therefore, Mother Earth has smiled upon them as a nation. And
Andrew, I want to mention quickly the work you're doing. You're going to see the Hopis. You're filming a documentary, so you can really Well, you're going to see the Hopis. Anyway, to bring the importance of their culture and their teaching, you're bringing it to the world. And I just want to mention, in Tibet, there are some people here in L.A., and I just want to quickly mention AmritDevaWorld.com. They filmed a documentary in Tibet. At this website, you can see it, and you can see the change that's happening, and they're starting to free these people that on the edges of India that border China, and where Tibetan culture is trying to survive.
Right. We were trying to relate to Valhalla, all those things. And I didn't really want to get into the dark because I'm right now in the verge of trying to get all the X's and O's and dotted and everything consummated and everything, too. And I didn't want to elaborate on that too much. Thanks a lot.
Everybody's going to be excited. Well, it's, you know, you're doing wonderful things, and you're one of the people that are helping this wisdom, with this ancient wisdom, reemerge for the benefit of all.
Yeah, well, it's, and you know what, and I just think that there's a lot of people out there doing whatever they can to, like yourself and many others, and I think it's like, an old teacher of mine said, there was a pebble thrown in the water and it's created another pebble in the water, and each pebble creates another ripple and another ripple. And as much as this rippling continues further and further, it'll only increase with a momentum of a high vibration within humanity and with increasing form. And with choice, people grab hold of their surfboard and ride this wave with in the coming ascension. Because that's what it is. You're live the life of a surfer. You ride that wave or you'll be just knocked off the wave. You know, you can't swim against it. And I think that's what's happening in these times. And your way is another way of riding that surfboard and getting on that board and riding it. And I think really highly of what you're trying to achieve, and you're amazing how you're I believe going around the world, which I think is so important. People see from different perspectives and cultures. If they can only see how, you know, the mask, physically we're different. Culturally, we may be different, but those are only superficial, and the real underlying force is the commonality that we're all deeply connected. And that is really the tree of life, the Bugatti tree. And then you mentioned a couple others, the scene tree and whatever, but they're all pretty much respond to the same notion.
The same teaching. Yeah.
And like everybody check out his website. And also, this show will go on archive. So anything of this information that you want to re-listen to it, it will no later than be up there by Monday. I will get on my producer to do that. And I want to thank everyone out there for listening. And,
thank you so much, Andrew, for having me out. I'm very grateful. It was an honor.
And Scott Judson, I really appreciate you coming on my show. Hopefully I will probably, when you're back in LA, I will be also there because I will be going back and forth from LA to Vegas. And,
I'd love to play some live music for you on your show one day.
Yeah, we could possibly set up. I was hopefully going to do that with another, person, but unfortunately, our studio wasn't lined up for me. So we lost control of our own studio for 2 months. I guess it's been booked up for 2 months. But when it's open, I would love to have you on playing live. Or if not with a studio, but maybe we can improvise. That would be great to do. And,
I want to say a quick hello to Masonic Temple. They'll be back in LA in a couple months and I'll be doing some shows with them. And,
That'd be really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Shane and you and gang with you.
And I'm also working with a wonderful artist. His name is Paul Green, and you can go to paulgreen.com. He's a successful actor and model. It's spelled G-R-E-E-N-E, and an incredible songwriter. So I'm going to be working with him, producing some of his material. And also, like I mentioned, O Fair Moses from loveyourself.net. This is another incredible producer and songwriter who's had some wonderful success. So I'll be spending a lot of time in L.A. I really hope to connect with you, Andrew, so we can talk more about all of this important wisdom.
Yeah, and like I said, in the future, I definitely want to have you back. I know I'd like to get more next time, more in-depth of your travels, because I think that would be fascinating in its own self. I'm surprised you have it. I don't know if you journal it, but it would be a fascinating writing if you indeed like to write books and whatnot. But
I do. I have been keeping records of my experiences, and I do hope to one day document them and share it.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting. And with that, I want to, again, thank you for coming on my show. And I'm closing with your song, and I hope maybe you can pronounce it for me. It's I don't want to say it the wrong way.
This is Apsahaihoa Sacheda Sachedoa. This is a very powerful mantra. I put it to some modern rock music so you can feel the energy.
And with that, I want to thank you all, and God bless you.
God bless. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Children of love, we're turning the page to the Aquarian age, and we are the children of love. Remembering the fallen, answering the calling, we are the children of love. We're turning the page to the Aquarian age, and we are the children of love. When the sun tokes on, I'm but you'll leave the arm, kick it every boot. Kita kaku ari karya juga danda petita. Air panti segar jemati manji tejo jita. A days to say a days. Hanani lana nara naha juga edo bay.